भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवत्युत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिके। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नंदनाय च नंदगोपाकुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः।
हरे कृष्ण। सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम एथ कैंटो 41st वर्स। Because they know purports to many of the verses, so we'll be reading up to 56th verse, and we'll be discussing further on 56th verse. So I'll just read out the translations until then, because there are 17-18 shlokas. We'll be reading just the translations. Text number 41. Maharaj Bali then attacked Indra with 10 arrows and attacked Airavata, Indra's carrier elephant, with 3 arrows. With 4 arrows he attacked the 4 horsemen guarding Airavata's legs, and with 1 arrow he attacked the driver of the elephant. Purport: the word Vahan refers to the soldiers on horseback who protected the legs of the carrier elephants. According to the system of military arrangement, the legs of the elephant bearing the commander were also protected. 42nd verse. Before Bali Maharaj's arrows could reach him, Indra, king of heaven, who is expert in dealing with arrows, smiled and counteracted the arrows with arrows of another type, known as Bhalla, which were extremely sharp. 43rd. When Bali Maharaj saw the expert military activities of Indra, he could not restrain his anger. Thus he took up another weapon known as Shakti, which blazed like a great firebrand. But Indra cut that weapon to pieces while it was still in Bali's hand. 44th verse. Thereafter, one by one, Bali Maharaj used a lance, prasa, tomara, rishtis and other weapons. But whatever weapons he took up, Indra immediately cut them to pieces. 45th verse. My dear king, Bali Maharaj then disappeared and resorted to demoniac illusions. A giant mountain generated from illusion then appeared above the heads of the demigod soldiers. 46th verse. From that mountain fell trees blazing in a forest fire. Chips of stone with sharp edges like picks also fell and smashed the heads of the demigod soldiers. 47th verse. Scorpions, large snakes and many other poisonous animals, as well as lions, tigers, boars and great elephants, all began falling upon the demigod soldiers, crushing everything. 48th verse. O my king, many hundreds of male and female carnivorous demons, completely naked and carrying tridents in their hands, then appeared, crying the slogans, cut them to pieces, pierce them. 49th verse. Fierce clouds harassed by strong winds then appeared in the sky, rumbling very gravely with the sound of thunder. They began to shower live coals. 50th verse. A great devastating fire created by Bali Maharaj began burning all the soldiers of the demigods. This fire, accompanied by blasting winds, seemed as terrible as the Samvartaka fire, which appears at the time of dissolution. 51st verse. Thereafter, whirlpools and sea waves, agitated by fierce blasts of wind, appeared everywhere before everyone's vision in a furious flood. 52nd verse. While the magical atmosphere in the fight was being created by the invisible demons, who were expert in such illusions, the soldiers of the demigods became morose. 53rd verse. O king, when the demigods could find no way to counteract the activities of the demons, they wholeheartedly meditated upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the creator of the universe, who then immediately appeared. 54th verse. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose eyes resemble the petals of a newly blossomed lotus, sat on the back of Garuda, spreading his lotus feet over Garuda's shoulders, dressed in yellow, decorated with the Kaustubha gem and the goddess of fortune, and wearing an invaluable helmet and earrings, the Supreme Lord, holding various weapons in his eight hands, became visible to the demigods. 55th verse. As the dangers of a dream cease when the dreamer awakens, the illusions created by the jugglery of the demons were vanquished by the transcendental prowess of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as soon as he entered the battlefield. Indeed, simply by remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one becomes free from all dangers. So now we have come up to the today's verse. So we'll be reading out the Sanskrit shloka.
Drishtva mrute garda vaham ibari vaha. Avidya sula mahino datakala nemi. Tallilaya garda mutni patat grihitva. Tene hanan ripasvavam arim trayadishah.
Word to word translation, kindly repeat after me.
Drishtva, seeing, mridhe, on the battlefield, Garuda Vaham, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, carried by Garuda. Ibhari Vaha, the demon who was carried by a big lion. Avidya, whirling around. Sulam, trident. Ahinoth, discharged at him. Atha, thas. Kala Nemi, the demon Kala Nemi. Tat, such an attack by the demon against the Supreme Lord. Lilaya, very easily. Garuda Mutni, on the head of his carrier Garuda. Patat, while falling down. Grihitva, after taking it immediately, without difficulty. Tena, and by the same weapon. Ahanath, killed. Drupa, O king, Savaham, with his carrier. Arim, the enemy. Triadishaha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the proprietor of the three worlds. Translation purported by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. Translation. O king, when the demon Kala Nemi, who was carried by a lion, saw that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, carried by Garuda, was on the battlefield, the demon immediately took his trident, whirled it and discharged it at Garuda's head. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, the master of the three worlds, immediately caught the trident, and with the very same weapon, he killed the enemy Kalanemi along with his carrier, the lion. Purport. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya says, Kalanemi adaya sarve karina nihata api sukrino jitva santaha punasteneva patitaha. Kalanemi and all the other demons were killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, and when Shukracharya, their spiritual master, brought them back to life, they were again killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Om Jnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurvun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Gurun Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tvam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrushabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hare Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Krupa Sindubhyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Sunyavadi Paschata Deshatarine Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
So I'll be reading out verse number 57 also, which is the last verse of the chapter, and this also does not have any purport, so I'll read out the translation. Thereafter, two very powerful demons named Mali and Sumali were killed by the Supreme Lord, who severed their heads with his disc. Then Malyavan, another demon, attacked the Lord. With a sharp club, the demon, who was roaring like a lion, attacked Garuda, the lord of the birds, who are born from eggs. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original person, used his disc to cut off the head of that enemy also. Hare Krishna. So before starting being to speak, I humbly seek the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas here, so that I'll be able to speak something which is completely in line with the purpose of Prabhupada and Parampara, and which is meaningful to all of us. And this, let me do it for my own purification. By seeking these blessings, I would like to start off. You must have heard of
in the previous verses, and all of today's verses also we have been reading out all of these verses. We have seen that most of these verses are describing the battle between these demons and devatas, which is going on. The whole of this chapter, in fact, describes this war in very much detail. And we get to see in many of the Puranas and Itihasas that these sort of battles were described in very detail. Just like in Mahabharata, we can see the fierce battle which is described in detail. Ramayana, and even in Bhagavatam also, many other battles, like the battle that Lord Krishna and Balaram fought with Rukmi when he when he was bringing Rukmini. That battle also was also described in very great detail. The battle of the devatas with demons, that was also described in great detail. So one may actually wonder why these battles are being described in such great detail. What does it matter to us when somebody is throwing an arrow and somebody is defending it and somebody is using some other weapons? And what does actually matter to us if somebody is throwing all of these arrows at each other? So in this regard, and moreover, it may also appear that why is it that we have to believe in all of these things? Because here, the battles that are being described here, they're even beyond the imaginative power of normal people, because they are more fearsome than the Star Wars. Because the kind of weapons that they are using, even the Star Wars, they use some mechanical engines and mechanical parts and mechanical vehicles, but here the vehicles are more lively. Even the weapons are more lively. So it gets very difficult for a person to comprehend these kind of descriptions in the Shastras, and usually a person disbelieves them. Who does not have sufficient faith in the Shastras, he does not invest his faith in these sort of descriptions. This happens because due to lack of faith in Shastras. Today morning I was hearing a lecture of Prabhupada. In that, Prabhupada he was elaborating on Ajamil's pastime, wherein he says that he was describing about the degradation. The first degradation that comes upon a person is degraded association. And when the association is degraded, what happens further is he loses faith in the Shastras. And when a person loses faith in Shastras, then he becomes Vairachari. This is the sequence that Prabhupada is describing. First comes degraded association, and followed by loss of faith in Shastras. And loss of faith in Shastras leads to Svairachari, that is very independent, whimsical behavior. That is, as described in Bhagavad Gita, then he takes to Jaganya Vrittistha. He takes to very abominable activities, and thereby, which leads to his further suffering. So here Prabhupada was saying that the main reason why people lose faith in Shastras is bad association or degraded association. So definitely it is a very difficult thing to have faith, to develop faith in these sort of descriptions. Even when we talk about the other day, I was hearing a lecture by His Holiness Radha Goswami Maharaj. He was elaborating on Chitraketu Maharaj's pastime, wherein he was describing that he was starting with this, that Chitraketu Maharaj had 1 crore wives. It gets really very difficult for a person to understand this. How can a person have 1 crore wives? And then when a person hears these sort of descriptions, then he simply understands that acha, Shastras means there is something which are to be believed upon very blindly.
But this is absolutely not so. Because in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he categorizes the devotees based upon the faith. He categorizes devotees into Kanishtam, Madhyam and Uttam Adhikari based upon the faith. And in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami elaborates on this and further describes what is that faith, what is the difference in faith between each of these categories. When he describes about Uttam Adhikari, he says that he has Prauda Shraddha and his Nischay is Drida. He has firm conviction and his faith is not blind. And Uttam Adhikari, he is very strong in Shastras and he is very logical as well. So from this we get to know that the belief of Uttam Adhikaris in the Shastras is absolutely not blind, rather it is completely based on proper logic, understanding of the scriptures and all of this. So it is not blind, in fact. And when he describes about Madhyam Adhikaris, he says that the faith of Madhyam Adhikaris, yes, they have faith, but they lack scriptural knowledge, because of which they will not be able to defend their faith with proper scriptural injunctions. So they have faith, but they do not have scriptural backup. When it comes to Kanishta Adhikaris, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says that their faith is komal. They have very delicate faith. And when a person has this sort of delicate faith, this can very easily be destroyed. This can very easily be hampered. Just like a flower, if it is mishandled, it gets hampered or disturbed very easily. Similarly, a person who is having komal shraddha, he can be disturbed or brought down from his status very easily. When he is posed with these sort of questions that how come Chitraketu Maharaj could have 1 crore wives, then is completely disturbed because he has no answer for it. So he is not able to back that statement with proper scriptural understanding, so proper logic, so he will not be able to stand by. Whereas in the case of Madhyam Adhikari, even though he faces such questions, he may not be able to defend himself with proper logic and proper scriptural injunctions, but his faith is not disturbed. Whereas in the case of Kanishta Adhikari, his faith is disturbed. But in the case of Uttam Adhikari, he will be able to answer it, he will be able to defend his statements with proper logic. Just like in that statement, Radha Goswami Maharaj, he was giving his logic, though because of my foolish mind I was unable to comprehend the example, but still I'll just repeat what he has told. He was saying that Chitraketu Maharaj, he was having 1 crore wives, in the sense that, and moreover, all of these wives happened to be infertile. Having 1 crore wives itself is a great thing, and all of them turning out to be infertile is also a great coincidence again. This is such a great combination. Then Maharaj was saying that just like coincidentally many people happen to travel in the same train. When all of them get to travel in the same train, coincidentally, when thousands of people get to travel in the same train, why not this also happen coincidentally? And he was also saying that on one part of the earth sun shines, and the other part it is darkness. And when it is night on the other half of the world, then all the people in that part, they go to bed. So he was saying that the crores of people, those who are residing in that place, if they can coincidentally do the same activity of sleeping, then why can't this also coincidentally happen, that all of Chitraketu Maharaj's wives
happened to be infertile. So this was the logic he was quoting, defending his statements. This shows that whatever belief that these people have, Uttamadhikaris have, in the statements of the scriptures, that's not blind, rather it is completely based on proper logic and proper scriptural understanding. With this, we'll go ahead and discuss one more. And it is also great wonder to see that why all of these descriptions are being made in such great detail. It is a big question. When a person who is about to die is sitting in front of him, and Sukadeva Goswami is going on describing who is throwing an arrow and who is defending it by what arrow, and what is all this happening here? And this person is sitting thirsty and hungry, and he is going on describing the vars here. So why is this all happening? Then in reference to that, to this, once Prabhupada, he makes this the following statement. He says that we are not interested in such battles, but our only interest is because it is connected to Krishna. Though we are not interested in such kind of battles, our only interest is because it is connected to Krishna. And elsewhere, Prabhupada, he makes the following statement in reference to Bhagavad Gita, the battle which went on in Kurukshetra. So people may ask that by mentioning these great fighters, what spiritual progress we make. He is referring to the shloka which is given in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, wherein the names of different fighters was being mentioned there. Because we are meant for chanting Hare Krishna Mahamantra, so by chanting the names of these great fighters, what do we gain? The question may be raised there. But the thing is that Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe, whenever there is connection with Krishna, that also becomes Krishna. So these various name mentioning, we should not neglect. Krishna wanted to gather all the demoniac power in that battlefield of Kurukshetra and kill them. That was his plan. So in this way, Prabhupada is explaining that whatever it be, as long as it is connected to Krishna, it is purifying. Even if you chant the names of the fighters who have taken part in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, still it is equally purifying as it is with the other shlokas of Bhagavad Gita. So similarly, the descriptions that we are going through in the Srimad Bhagavatam, they are equally purifying as it is with other shlokas of Bhagavatam also. So that is why. And moreover, whenever Sukadeva Goswami used to go with a rapid pace and used to cut short his descriptions, immediately Parikshit Maharaj used to stop him and ask him to go ahead with the detailed description. Because devotees relish each and every activity that the Lord performs in great detail. They want to relish each and everything of this. And that is why this is a kind of meditation that can happen by reading these descriptions which are mentioned in this chapter. And further, in the course of today's verses, we have seen that Indra was fighting with Bali Maharaj, and when Bali Maharaj was about to be defeated, he started manifesting some illusions which Indra and other devatas could not defend. And many of the devatas started dying. And later on, Indra, he approached the Supreme Lord, requested for his participation, requested for his protection. And then the Supreme Lord entered the battlefield and he started fighting with the demons. This is what happened. So in this, we see that the devatas, they have sought shelter of the Supreme Lord when the situation was just going out of the hands.
When the situation was just about to go out of the hands, they sought shelter of the Supreme Lord. So this kind of attitude of the Devatas is seen very commonly now and then in many instances in Bhagavatam. Even in the case of Vrittasa's pastime also, there also when the Devatas were about to be defeated, they approached the Supreme Lord and sought an idea how Vrittasur could be killed. Then the Supreme Lord, he suggested them that you can go up to Dadichi who would give away his bones and by which you can construct a thunderbolt by which you can kill Vrittasur. So in this way, Devatas, whenever they were in this sort of situation, they had the habit of approaching the Supreme Lord. Definitely it is very natural for devotees to approach the Supreme Lord at times of danger. And we can also see that in the case of Vrajavasis also, whenever some dangerous situation used to come up in their lives, they used to seek, cry out for the shelter of the Supreme Lord. This happens with all the Vrajavasis. They usually call for the Supreme Lord for protection whenever there is a danger. So here in this case, the demons are also calling out for the shelter, and here Vrajavasis are also calling out for the shelter. So what's the difference, and why these demigods are termed as Karma Mishra Bhakt or Mishrit Bhaktas, and whereas the Vrajavasis are pure devotees? Both of them are doing the same activity, that is seeking shelter of the Supreme Lord at times of danger. But what is the difference that differentiates both of them? If we closely observe this, we can see that whenever the demigods are seeking shelter of the Supreme Lord, there is an ulterior motive behind their seeking shelter. They want the Lord to protect them, protect their prosperity or property, so that they will be able to enjoy it further. That is why they asked the Lord to kill Vrittasur, so that they can enjoy the kingdom. So similarly, whenever the Devatas approach the Supreme Lord, they have an ulterior motive, saying that they want to enjoy the kingdom. Whereas the Vrajavasis, though they were approaching the Supreme Lord for their protection, still still the difference is that they do not approach with some ulterior motive, rather with an intention to continue their service to the Supreme Lord. They were serving the Supreme Lord prior to the danger, and the danger has come up. They want the Lord to tackle the danger so that they can continue the service to the Supreme Lord further. So with this intention only they approach the Supreme Lord. Still, many a times it comes up in devotees' minds that still if the Vrajavasis are approaching the Supreme Lord for their own protection, then this could be considered a selfish desire. And if there is any sort of selfish desire, even for one's own protection, then how can it be called pure devotion? This is a common question that can come up in devotees' minds whenever they hear about this thing, that Vrajavasis also approach the Supreme Lord for their own protection, seeking one's own protection from the Lord. That is also again engaging the Supreme Lord in one's own service. Then that is something selfish. Then how can this be called pure devotion? In response to this, if we again refer to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the statement, the definition that Rupa Goswami presents in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, we see that anyabilashita sunyam jnana karmadi anavritam anukulyena krishnanushilanam bhaktir uttamam. This is the definition. So as per the first sentence, it is said that anya abhilashita sunyam, there should not be any desire for one's own selfish thing. So, but how does this desire be accommodated in the definition then? This was further explained by the commentaries of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur and others. They explained by saying that though Rupa Goswami stated that it is anyabhilashita sunyam, he did not say it is anyabhilasha sunyam. That is, bilkul, it is not like devoid of any selfish desire. Rather, it is said that there should not be any tendency to have any material desires. So this is incorporated by the word tha, that is anyabhilasha tha, that is anyabhilashita. So with this word he accommodated this thing by saying that the tendency should not be there. Rather, this sort of desires wherein one's very survival is at threat, wherein one's survival is at threat, such sort of desires are accommodated. He says that this changes the meaning from simply desire to the tendency to desire. This adjustment accommodates other desires within the scope of Krishna consciousness. Desires such as the basic urges of life, eating, sleeping and self-preservation. And the desires for all of these things that is included within the definition of Rupa Goswami's Uttama Bhakti. So by this we can understand that the very call for the protection by Vrajvasis is not excluded from pure devotion. Rather, it is well within pure devotion, because it is allowed, because such sort of desires are allowed within pure devotion, because it is a threat to one's own survival. And this one last thing I want to conclude with by saying that there are Prabhupada in his various purports and in different places in Bhagavatam, we come across two different types of people approaching the Supreme Lord. One is the category of devatas who are approaching the Supreme Lord with some selfish desire. And second category is the devotees who are aspiring to get free from material bondage, but still because of their conditionings they are forced to carry on with these material desires because of their conditions. Though they want to get free from material bondage, but still because of their conditionings they are hanging on to their material desires. But in the other case, people like devatas, they also approach the Supreme Lord with material desires, but they do not have the desire to get free from material bondage. In these two cases, the Lord responds in a very different and unique way. You can see that in Vrittasur's pastime, Vrittasur, he tells Indra the following statement: persons who fully surrender at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and always think of his lotus feet are accepted and recognized by the Lord as his own personal assistants or servants. The Lord never bestows upon such servants the brilliant opulences of the upper, lower and middle pantry systems of this material world. When one possesses material opulence in any of these three divisions of the universe, his possessions naturally increases enmity, anxiety, mental agitation, pride and belligerence. Thus, one goes through much endeavor to increase and maintain his possessions, and he suffers great unhappiness when he loses them. And in the second half of this statement, Vrittasura is giving the reason why the Lord does not award such kind of opulences to his devotees, who may even ask the Lord. They may ask the Lord, but the Lord is not going to award them. But what the Lord is going to do in turn to them is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita.
in Madhya Lila 22:39, it is said that
Ami vigyaye murke vishayake nidiba swacharnamruta diya vishaya bulaiba.
Translation is, since I am very intelligent, the Lord Himself is saying, since I am very intelligent, why should I give this fool material prosperity? Instead, I shall induce him to take the nectar of the shelter of my lotus feet and make him forget illusory material enjoyment. And this is how the Lord responds. He, rather than giving him the material prosperity, rather he induces the person to taste the nectar of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, so that he gets addicted to that nectar and he will lose taste for the other material desires. And elsewhere, Prabhupada makes the statement saying that whenever a genuine devotee who wants to get free from material bondage but still hangs on to these material desires because of his conditionings, the Supreme Lord, taking mercy upon him, what does he do is, this person is going for material desires, the Lord in turn takes away all of his material things and makes him completely helpless, so that that person would come back to his lotus feet. So this is how the Lord responds. It's a very different and unique way. Whereas in the case of people like Indra or people like demigods who approach the Supreme Lord with these material desires, but they do not desire to get free from material bondage, for them the Lord awards what they are desiring for. And awarding material desires means all of these things that Vrittas are saying is going to follow. So this is how the Lord responds differently in different cases. So it's 9. So I would like to end my words here. If you want to, if I have spoken something wrong or something which is inappropriate, so please correct me. Although all of you are very much senior to me, I dare to sit here as a service. So please accept me as your servant who try to study the scriptures and try to present the statements of the Shastras. I try to present it as it is, as to whatever possible I could. Any corrections or anything? Yes, please.
Thank you. So whatever I heard from various senior devotees, I'll try to repeat that. Once in ISKCON Delhi, His Holiness Radha Goswami Maharaj, he was giving a lecture. In the course of his lecture, he was somewhat talking about the same thing. He was saying that because devotees do not have anybody else than Krishna, where do they go when they have some problem? They'll have to ultimately go to Krishna only, rather than going to somebody else and begging from them, rather go to Krishna and beg from him. So in this way Maharaj was saying, so if we are unable to withstand ourselves. So rather we can go up to Krishna because he is the only shelter, and where else can we go? So better we go to Krishna and then talk to him. Because as Krishna is saying, if a Suhrat, because Krishna himself is declaring that I am your well-wisher. Well-wisher is someone who shares, who simply does not take service, rather he shares everything with us. Whatever we have, we share with him. Just like we share everything with our friends and family, we share everything with Krishna. And he's our only person who would help us, or who may choose not to help us, or help us in a way which we may not be able to comprehend also. So this is how. And second thing we were asking, what was second thing?
Second was that internally we may be taking time to take shelter of the Lord, but externally we have to also show that time to fight in external forces, whether it is our business, family, work life.
True. This is very much true that because people are looking for a chance to exploit. People are waiting out there for a chance to exploit. Whenever they find people so humble and so meek, say they get a very nice chance to exploit those people who are so humble and meek. That's why Narad Muni gives this example of a snake. When Narad Muni, he initiated snake, and when he returned back, he found that the snake was bleeding. He asked the snake, "What happened to you?" The snake responded saying that, "See Narad Muni, you have instructed me in Trinada Pisuna Chena, so I am following what you have told me." Then Narad Muni told that, "I have asked you not to bite, but I haven't ever told you not to hiss. So you can hiss, but you do not bite." So similarly, in the materialistic life, we may have to dodge people, but we may not take to malpractices or sinful activities to defend ourselves. So with this, maybe it should be clear that we have to face those situations. And the second point is that though we may be doing these sort of activities, still we should be very careful that we do not put our heart into it. Our heart should be with Krishna. We may externally be doing these activities, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has advised Sanatana Goswami, that you may externally do these activities because you are bound to do them, just for showing off to the materialistic world, but we should be careful that our heart is not engaged in these sort of activities. If our heart is engaged, then we cannot be with Krishna. So maybe these two points should clarify. Thank you very much. Grandhara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Tai Gaur Premanande.